Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of May 4th. It's early on a Saturday morning, and with me is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm good. I'm alert. It's not that early, that's why. it's almost within the realm of what working people would consider daytime.
I paused momentarily when I said early. I'm like, no, it isn't. You know, I've already gotten up and gone for a run, did some laundry, checked my notes for the show, and had a little bit of food. And now I'm doing the podcast, and it's only 8 in the morning. So, yeah, it's still fairly early, but not that early. So, yeah. But for a Saturday, it's kind of early because I think some people sleep in.
Yeah, says somebody whose family is safely ensconced at the in-laws.
I put it this way.
Doesn't have a spouse keeping them awake until 2 or 3 complaining things.
Yeah, my mother-in-law absconded with my family. That's the way I see it.
But it's not, yeah, but she's going to give them back.
Well, that's not guaranteed. They're going to wait for me to go to work. It's possible they'll wait for me to go to work and come here and clear everything out. You never know. But
in Japan, yes, indeed it is.
All right. Again, as we have been doing, thank you so much to the healthcare workers. Thank you to the essential workers as well. Thank you to the trained people. Thank you for everyone keeping up the fight through the COVID-19 pandemic. It is, I wish we could get more people to stay inside in Japan, particularly in Tokyo.
Wear masks when you go outside. Don't be the idiots. Don't let that be you.
Don't let that be you. All right. On this week's show, we've got a fantastic interview with Carter Stewart Jr. of SoftBank, and we've got a couple of notes and some high heat. So let's start swinging. All right, so this has been a very long time in coming, about a year, I think. And we've got double barrel action. Jim and I both had a phone conversation with Carter Stewart Jr. a week ago on April 25th. In fact, we did the interview in the morning on Saturday, and then we recorded last week's episode of the podcast later that night. So we had actually done an interview before we did the show. And I think many people know the story of Carter Stewart Jr. I've been calling him CSJ. He was the number 8 pick overall in the 2018 Major League Draft. The Atlanta Braves selected him, but according to reports, there was an injury, a wrist injury, and talk about reduction of a bonus. So he ended up going to junior college, according to reports now. And he was expected to fall to the second round in the 19 draft. So he was playing junior college, and he was expected maybe if he was in the second round, he'd end up getting around $2 million as a bonus. So I don't know how – we didn't ask him, but I don't know how it all started. But the stories about Japan – maybe you talked to Matt Skrmetta and found out how he ended up even making contact with SoftBank. Was it because he was acquainted with Matt?
Yeah, essentially. I mean, Matt Skrmetta is a SoftBank Hawks scout, and he's a neighbor who was coaching for his friend at the high school. I can't pronounce it, so I'm not going to try. Where Carter Stewart was playing.
Yeah, I saw that thing. Look it up, people. I'm not trying.
If I say it, I'm going to be making some people disappointed in my. My English language skills, and I do that regularly. Enough without adding to that conflagration.
Right. So anyway, through Matt, and we've had Matt on the show, I think it was last year in the off season, 2019.
Yep. I had the chat with him at the winter meetings. Yep.
Right. So we had Matt on the shows. You can go back and listen to that. So eventually Carter ended up taking his talents to SoftBank and kind of a reverse Shohei Ohtani move. And I think the signing also, with Ohtani, obviously had a Japanese player staying here, but mm-hmm. both guys basically shunning the major league organizations and the arduous climb through the minor leagues up to the big leagues. It has a cluttered path, you know, bus rides, questionable fields, poor wages, working conditions, again, questionable. But as I was jogging this morning, I was thinking, yeah, Carter's a trailblazer. He's, you know, we use the word groundbreaking, pioneer, all those things. But to me, I think it hit me when I was running this morning that he's the Curt Flood of baseball, in a sense that he's opening up a new path, just giving himself freedom and giving. I don't think it's open to everybody, and I don't think it was open to everybody when Curt Flood did it.
It wasn't even open to Curt Flood.
It wasn't even open to Curt Flood, but I don't think it's every player's path. But I thought that's what he is doing, because I was thinking, who is he like? You know, is this going to be people in the future are going to say, oh, this guy's going to pull a CSJ and go to Japan or go to another country and start playing. You know, it could be Korea, it could be Taiwan. But anyway, he's gotten control of his career. He put it in his hands. And I think I asked you during the week because I wanted to know what the control of the team is. And basically, Carter signed a 6-year deal. So that's what the control of the Hawks is. It's for 6 years. After that, he's completely free. He's a free agent. Sign anywhere. So that's awesome. So his deal with SoftBank netted him $7+ million last year. And as I said, he can become a free agent and he can return to the States. He can join another NPB team. You know, those are some of the financial considerations to which you'll hear him refer in the interview. And I talked to our old friend Dave DeFreitas about him. Dave DeFreitas was a scout for the Indians and the Yankees when he was here in Japan. He was a Pacific Rim scout. And, you know, the scouts all said he throws hard and has really good secondary stuff. And the great thing about our format here on JBW is that you have the opportunity. Now, Jim and I both did stories and they were released on Friday and about Carter. And, you know, you see the words on a page or you see the words on your phone or whatever device you're looking at. And, okay, they have some impact, but when you hear the person speak and put all the comments into context and the tenor and the inflection and even the personality that they put into the interview, into the response to the questions, it's, I'm really glad we had an opportunity to do this.
Are you trying to tell me I need to put personality into my work?
No, you need to shorten your questions. But anyway, you'll hear me try to steer Jim back onto the question route as he goes.
My brain doesn't work that way. It's context, context, context. And now, are you ready or are you sleeping?
Is this thing on?
That's a good question.
All right, so we took a circuitous route in the outfield to catch up with Carter, but we finally got to him, and it's a pretty thorough chat, and I hope you all enjoy it, so let's take a listen. All right, we are very, very pleased to be joined by Carter Stewart Jr. of the SoftBank Hawks this morning. Thank you very much for taking the time. Good morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me. You know, definitely a little early morning for me, but I'm ready to answer some questions and, you know, answer whatever you guys got for me.
All right. So first of all, how are you doing in this time of uncertainty, which I hate that phrase because every day is really uncertain. We make plans, but the gods laugh at us. But go ahead. How are you doing?
Right now, I mean, it's more of a maintaining period. You know, it's really hard to go out there and do anything like super specific. You know, I'm not really throwing bullpens right now, wondering, kind of like taking it slow. You know, once we have some general idea, I'd like to ramp it back up as quick as possible. But right now it's more of a maintain, you know, work out, do your running, do all that and get out of there every day while trying to stay as healthy as possible.
Okay. Now your path here to NPB is groundbreaking. So what was the impetus in starting your career in not just Japan, but NPB in particular?
I just thought at the time and now that it's just the best opportunity for me. You know, it has, the baseball is fantastic. The whole player base of fans, everything is great about it. And, you know, just with the timing, you know, the way that everything happened back in the States for me, you know, just everything just came together and gave me this opportunity to, do something overseas and gave me an opportunity to do something groundbreaking as you're talking about. And I really like trying new things and, you know, going down paths that people haven't done before. And, mm-hmm. you know, I like the individual aspect of it, you know, doing something new and doing something. And, you know, obviously the opportunity is fantastic in and of itself. And, you know, just that opportunity that I have now to show, to prove what I can do, to prove, to create a new path, especially what's going on now with what's going to happen in the MLB and not knowing what path, you know, not knowing what's going to happen to a lot of players because of, you know, the limited, you know, the new draft coming up, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So right. All these different things make this opportunity for me even more, you know, growing other than just what initially happened, you know. Mm-hmm. Obviously I did it how what I initially thought, you know, the opportunity was great, stuff like that. But now you just more parts growing towards a bigger, you know, a bigger picture.
Right. And we've heard so much. In fact, it has been a huge topic in the media and throughout baseball about the poor salaries that minor leaguers receive over in the States. So how much of that was a part of the factor in signing with SoftBank?
I mean, obviously that's something that's in the back of your head that's something that was in the back of my head when I was thinking about it, but I don't think it was too much of a big issue. Obviously that's, you know, that's part of the way that life is in our baseball is in the minor leagues in the States. You just have to get through it. You always have to, you know, you're trying to grind through or get to the big leagues. And it's the same thing over here. Obviously, you know, I've got fortunate in that sense, but I don't think it was too much of an issue in the decision-making process. I think it more came down to the baseball part of it.
Let me ask now, Matt Scarmetta told me that you were, you know, he'd been sort of, I don't know, propagandizing you or I don't know, inoculating you about Japan. You've been getting the Japan baseball vaccine for some years. He said, oh, I'd shown him videos. But how was the experience for you going when you came last May to Fukuoka and then when you came a month later? I think was it April you came originally?
Yeah, well, I came mid-May, and then I actually signed
right.
and came over here, and I think it was like June 1st was like one of my first days.
Okay.
Yeah, so, it's almost been a year, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how was that that realization from this is a video, that was a video, and this is real life, and how was that that emotion or that sensation for you and how different it was, or this is really it, or wow, or... Oh, is this all there is?
Yeah, no. I think one of the main things that got me the realization of like the opportunity and the you know, the realism of it is like the interaction with other people here. You know, obviously growing up, I didn't get to visit a lot of different countries, and I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, this was such a unique and interesting opportunity for me. Is I've always liked to travel. I always wanted to. And that just added to the idea. Like whenever I got over here, I was like, man, like these people are great people. Like they're really caring. They're amazing fans. And then just everything in between. And then that kind of makes you realize like, oh, I'm here. Like I this is an opportunity I have. These are the people I'm going to be around every day. So then, you know, I get past that part and then I look at the baseball part of it. You know, it's absolutely incredible baseball. And you go from there, and then you just keep realizing all the good things. And obviously, there's not everything's perfect here, and as you guys know, every country has their mistakes and their downsides. But also, you have to realize that, like, compared to like playing in the States, I feel like the best opportunity and the best, like, everything was better here than it was in the States at the time.
All right. Well, so you made the decision. But what's some of the best advice that you've gotten along this journey? It could have been before you made the decision to come over here. It could have been after you've come over. What was the best advice that you've gotten?
Well, I mean, there's definitely a lot of stuff. I think some, obviously one of the guys that you guys have had Dennis around a lot, and you know, maybe not even best advice. A lot of these older guys that I've been, you know, around, the older foreigner guys, there's only a few of them, but, you know, being around them has taught me a lot about the game of baseball. And I mean, I'm only 20 now. I turned 21 this year. And I mean, these guys, Dennis is obviously, you guys know Dennis is 39. He's turning 40 soon. I mean, these other guys, even like someone like Matt, and he's new, someone like Vandy, he's been here for a while. Just being around those guys and not even necessarily the advice they give me, just seeing how every day what they do, the way they work, you know, their ability, what they've been through, like what they went through in the States, what they went through here, obviously someone like Vandy, what he went through in Korea. I mean, all that is just something like, those are just small stuff that I ask those guys and they build up to like, you know, me learning more about, you know, what life is like and what not what life is like, what baseball is like here, what baseball is like in the States, you know, all the small things that, you know, add up to a bigger, you know, bigger picture.
Interesting. No, that was actually going to be one of my questions, was how was the interaction? Because you were, I know that Rick was down there in the Chicago.
Yeah, Chicago.
Chicago, my pronunciation. I have never been there. I have to just imagine it. Stay-at-home stadium, or I guess that's called really. Stay-at-home stadium now. So I imagine that you had some interaction, or I hoped you did. So yeah, that was interesting, because I know he's been through everything from university, you know, college ball in the States and minor league ball in the States and Korea, and he has some perspective. Yeah, as a
what's your question?
Okay, so yeah, I was getting to the question, which was, you know, everyone asked me, or I talked to Gorey and I talked to Matt in December at the winter meetings, and they were saying that the great thing for you is that you're not getting used to sort of the laid back, do it yourself minor league training in the States. You know,
yeah,
it's up to you, and here they're going to teach you and they're going to guide you and kick you if you need kicking.
I can agree on that.
And so how has that experience been? Because my concern was, there's an 18-year-old kid from America who's maybe not, whose baseball is not a not the military like it is in Japan and Korea.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously early on and even now, there's definitely a lot of stuff I have to get used to. And there's definitely days where it's just like, oh God, like I can't even believe I'm doing this. I like, not even necessarily the baseball part, like, you know, how hard some of the stuff is and the different training styles, stuff like that. But, and obviously at times I'm being a little lazy and can be that way. Just it's in my blood. But, you know, I feel like every day I'm getting better and, you know, I'm trying to learn how to motivate myself more, drive myself more, even at a time like this where it's really hard to. And I think that's what's good to have, you know, guys around you who like, especially because I'm at the Dome right now, I have a lot of guys who are working hard every day. And it's just right now, it's, you know, I'm trying to motivate myself, trying to get better that way. And as well as whenever, because when we're practicing normally, when I'm around, when I'm in Chicago and stuff like that, you know, I have the guys to motivate me to, you know, to get me better every day. Right now, it's obviously a little different, you know, being on my own. I'm almost going through that minor league style a little bit, you know, because everything is individual right now. Right. And so right now, I'm definitely am learning more about, you know, motivating myself and getting better every day by myself. Well, you know, when I'm at Chicago, there's definitely a lot of guys around me to motivate me as well as me to motivate them.
Now, they told me that you had a very, and I actually read a story about this in Japanese when you went back to Japan, that sort of like they said, here's your plane tickets and here's your workout menu.
That's not too far off.
don't be confused that the tickets are the important thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Strenuous. What I heard was it was a lot of work.
My off season was, they gave me a pretty generalized workout program that I followed pretty well. But also I have a guy back where I am that I've worked out with for a long time who basically used that workout program and, you know, molded it into his own. So it was, it was definitely a long off season. I think more of the hardest off season part was, you know, ramping back up to throwing and stuff like that, because you never know like how long you're going to take, stuff like that, you know, and I swear I got kicked out of, like, honestly, when I was back home, when I was getting back onto into my throwing program, I got kicked off of like 6 or 7 different fields. It's not my fault, I swear. No one knows who I am back in the States, so I can't I can't pull that card on them. Mainly I just got, so like back in my old junior college campus, it's right next to where I live, so I would go there and throw, and I got kicked off by the same lady like 6 times. She's like, I ended up being called a football player by her at some point, and like that's a start for the book.
That's bad. If she had said golf, that would have been
okay. Yeah, I was like, dude, I was like, come on, like, really, you didn't even come close. Like, I got kicked off by her a bunch and stuff like that. But, you know, obviously moving back to the actual throwing program part of it. I think the throwing program was harder because like workouts you can do every day. Like I was doing 5 days a week, getting it done, you know, weekends I would have off. But, you know, the throwing program's the harder part because you don't really know how long you're gonna take. I had like a general, you know, you have a general idea. I've never really done like a specific throwing program to like get ready for a professional season. So right. I think that was more of a learning process for me. Mm-hmm. And I think I did a pretty good job going into spring training. I mean, really the first day I threw like a 30, 40, 40, 50 pitch bullpen.
And you're officially Japanese now.
Yeah, really. Day one, throw a bullpen. I got that one under my belt, and I probably would do it every year I'm here, to be completely honest. No, I mean, the first day, I still remember the first day like it was hell.
Yeah, it's not really a Japanese bullpen, though, until you have your catcher arguing with the umpire about whether it was a ball or a strike on the first day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, in a practice. Yeah, those practice umpires. So, let's look at it this way. You came to Japan and you're starting your career as a young guy. So how much concern was there about basically getting your chops here in Japan, but the brand of baseball not being the prevailing style in the big leagues? Because I'm assuming you want to go back to the States at some point and play.
Yeah, I mean, that's a weird question, you know, because like obviously I'd want to, but at the same time, there's so many different things that could happen, you know. Obviously, with, you know, how baseball is, you can ask Dennis, but baseball is it's a job until it isn't, you know, like obviously you have baseball after baseball. You can teach, you can be a coach and all that. But while you're playing baseball, you don't know how long your career is going to be and stuff like that. So right now I'm just trying to take the opportunity for what it is. And, you know, I have a specific amount of time already allotted, but I want it to be longer than that. You know, I want to perform well, I want to play well, and, you know, and I want to get better every day so I can play for a long period of time. And maybe at some point, you know, have an opportunity to go back to the States, which would be awesome. But at the same time, like I have no restraints for staying over here for until I'm 50, you know?
Oh, okay. Cause yeah, I mean, I thought of you as the reverse Shohei Ohtani in that, you know, you're going to start your career here just because it was going to be a smoother transition for him. And he could start and basically have a time that he could choose to basically go over there. We really never got the details of his contract with the Fighters, but
yeah,
that was the assumption that he had, you know, he had some time that he was going to get ready over here and then go back. And so you're on a 6-year deal.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. And I mean, and I agree with you on that. I would definitely want to go back to some point. It's just a matter of like, you know, obviously like, while I'm here and like, obviously with everything I've already been through here, like I love it over here. And like, I have no reason to like even want to go back anytime soon, just because like, you know, obviously I still think that baseball is fantastic over here. And I really enjoy the fan base. I enjoy the people, like I enjoy everything about it. So like, what is the driving factor for me to go back home? And, you know, maybe that will come on later in my career or later in my life, you know, if I want to have kids or stuff like that. But right now I have no real reason to want to go back home, you know?
Mm. Right. So what is that adjustment like then to coming over here and learning about Japanese baseball, not only as a pro, but as a developing player?
And as you started as a 19-year-old, I mean,
yeah,
I came here when I was 24. I mean, it's different.
Yeah, no, I mean, especially being in the baseball part of it, there's definitely a lot more to learn. And I think more taking it as a learning experience compared to like a, like, you know, taking it as just the baseball part of it, taking it as the whole culture, you know. If I came over here and was only wanting to like, it was only worrying about baseball and wasn't worrying about anything else, I have no chance to succeed, because I got to learn, you know. I can't just be obsolete to the guys, just someone who's playing baseball you can't even talk to. Like, I've already made friends and stuff on the team, which is awesome to me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the biggest thing is, like, obviously if anybody else wants to come over here at my age or anybody older, I mean, I think the biggest thing is just, you know, taking the whole culture compared to just baseball, because, you know, coaches see that, players see that, and, you know, they'll stray away from you if you're not trying to, you know, want to be like their want to talk to them. And obviously other players want to speak English, but if you want to try to speak Japanese to you, they'll want to try to speak English, vice versa. And then, you know, obviously the whole like culture thing is just, it's just such a big factor, these guys. And like, once like you, they know that you want to like be a part of their culture and you want to be a part of their like a part of their baseball compared to the American style of baseball, they'll take you in and they'll definitely they'll want to be friends with you, they'll want to learn with you, they'll want to help you learn stuff like that.
Wow.
Excellent.
Yeah, you know, because one of the themes that everybody harps on who's been here, and you know, and whether they've succeeded or not for the most part, is that you have to embrace it. And then that means something different for everybody. So the way you put that, I thought was really interesting. Now, as I said, I read one recently that, or maybe it was spring training, somebody said, yeah, that the food was an issue. And at first I thought, well, yeah, I suppose. But then I remembered when I was 18 in Europe, and I'd been in Europe for 30 days. And when I saw McDonald's, I about fell over and cried.
No, I definitely see. I'm not a huge, I'm a little bit of a picky person for sure, but I've gotten a lot better.
You're talking to the king here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You got a ways to go to beat John.
Yeah.
I'm extremely picky.
I've gotten better. I am pretty picky in that sense, but I've gotten a lot better. You know, I'm learning to eat more foods and stuff like that.
What kind of food do you like?
Japanese style. I definitely like, obviously anybody can like yakiniku and stuff like that, but you know, I love curry rice. You know, I'm fine with like soba and, you know, ramen and stuff like that. So I'm getting better. The only problem I have is I really dislike all seafood. That's like a big issue that I've
always had. We are blood brothers.
Yeah, really. No, I don't know why. I can't believe you've done it for so long over here without eating seafood, but it really isn't that hard, especially but if you're in Tokyo, right? No, you're,
I started in Nagoya and then I came to Tokyo, and I don't eat seafood. I don't eat any. I'm allergic to some fish, which I didn't find out until I came to Japan.
Well, yeah, in Tokyo, you know, the seafood. I mean, obviously there's a seafood market, but in Fukuoka, the seafood market is like their main thing. That is their stuff.
Yeah, the only way I'd be down there is if I were, you know, went out for a run and got lost.
John sees the fish, he goes the other direction. So
yeah, no seafood for me, and basically none of it.
Interesting.
You know, almost 30 years, but I don't eat seafood. I can't eat seafood, some of it. So you're talking about guys speaking English. What about Richard Sunagawa? Does he speak pretty good English?
Yeah, his English is pretty good. I mean, obviously his brother is in the States, and his dad, I've actually met his parents, and his parents are super nice. I think he's a little bit shy, and when he speaks English, because he wants to fit in a little bit more with the Japanese guys, because that's all of his friends. So I think he's a little bit shy when he's speaking English, but when he does, he definitely knows what he's talking about. He understands it extremely well. You know, obviously has a little bit of issues sometimes with, you know, the speaking part of it, which, you know, anybody who speaks English, second language, is a little bit difficult. But you know, it's really good, and especially when I have him, like when we're on the same team. He really, if he's playing infield and stuff, you know, it helps like talk to him sometimes and stuff like that to just calm the nerves and all that.
That's good. So who are some of the guys with whom you've formed relationships and friendships?
A lot of the guys from, you know, the minor leagues, there's a lot of, you know, I've talked to, guys that haven't made a lot of big league time yet. I mean, someone like Bando-san, you know, he was a draft pick last year. You know, some of the newer guys, Sugiyama, Richard, Ogata, the other guy who got the 2-digit number, and then some other 3-digit guys and stuff like that I've just been around a lot in the minor league facilities. That, you know, that I've really gotten to know a lot better. And then obviously, you know, the foreign guys, I'm all cool with.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah. Now, have they tried, or have you made any? Did you make any sort of baseball adjustments last year? Because I talked to people and they said that the basic purpose was to see what you could bring last year.
Yeah, no, I've made, as in baseball adjustments, I think there's definitely some both mentally and physically that I've made, definitely mentally, and learning how to face Japanese hitters. And then physically, there's just been some small stuff, or really stuff that I keep working on to this day, you know, using my legs more, and then certain, you know, certain ways I'm pitching off the mound and certain ways I'm throwing pitches. Definitely, like, you know, I'm trying to use fastball more, trying to be a more fastball pitcher, trying to work on the changeup and develop it to be another good pitch as well as my curveball, you know, working the plate better, stuff like that. You know, it's just small stuff that you have to work on every time you go out there on the mound, every time you go in the bullpen, and obviously the mental part of it, you know, not getting frustrated when a guy fouls off 7 pitches, stuff like that, which is way too common, by the way. I mean, it's at least once a game.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's pretty much just a common theme talking to pitchers, when you see the lefties who are like, it seems like they're there to ruin your life.
Oh, I agree. Oh yeah, 100%.
All right, so you decided to make MPB the start of your career. You came over once, then you went back home, and then you come over and you're on the team. What was that first practice like with the Hawks?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was really, I can't really say the first practice, because like the first, like really first week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks of practice was like, you know, getting used to it, like easy stuff, you know, limited time of the field, stuff like that. And, you know, stuff ramped up more, you know. Definitely practice is a lot different. It's a lot longer. It's, you know, it's my job now. It was first time that baseball is my job compared to, you know, playing it while I'm going to school. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that part's different, being in the field longer, but also at the same time, I'm enjoying it more because, you know, I get to do everything I want to. I get to, you know, work out. I get to do all the side menus, get to do all my throwing. And that's all I have to worry about. I just have to worry about getting better at baseball and nothing else.
Okay. Jim,
do you find time to play any golf?
I try to on off days. Right now, obviously, I can't. But in spring training, I played like 5 or 6 times with some of the guys on the team, and I really enjoyed it.
I'll bet. Are you the best one there?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Yeah, Matt gave me heads up on that. Well, I don't play, so I'm safe.
No worries. No, okay. I've played for a long time. I've actually played golf longer than I've played baseball, so I'm a decent golfer.
Yeah, I heard that was one of your options, was becoming a pro golfer or aspiring to be a pro golfer.
Yeah, I mean, that was a while ago. That was early high school days. But, you know, as I've gotten back, as I played baseball more, it's kind of become my favorite sport. Still love golf, though.
Okay. Well, now I wonder, I watched your first game in the preseason exhibition when you were pitching again in the first team, and I loved, you got just amazing amounts of spin. I was really, I'm going, wow, they weren't kidding, because that was the report I read in the States. But it looked like your command was, the pitches were moving, but the location, you were having trouble with the location. Is that?
Yeah, I'm going to attribute that one to a little bit, definitely nerves as well. I don't think I was nearly my best stuff. And, you know, I'm glad. You know, are you talking about the start against the first team against the Marines?
I'm glad you remember.
I was happy with the start overall, you know, the stats and everything were is what it is, and I was just more worried about, you know, I walked too many guys, stuff like that, right. But I was definitely nervous, and, you know, obviously it wasn't a huge deal, it was a preseason game, you know, and there's not fans there, but it was still, you know, it was a step up for me, you know, to get to face these guys, and, you know, I got a job done, I ended up getting the win or whatever, but in the end, the thing that stood out to me was I was able to work out of situations, you know, I got myself stuck in situations, and I got out of it over and over. And, you know, I know my stuff is good enough to not get in those situations as much as I did. I still think I got in those situations, obviously, because of walks and stuff. Mm. And, you know, if I can, you know, calm down and make it, you know, become more normalized with that style of pitching, you know, with the high intensity, you know, the better hitters and stuff, you know, obviously that's going to take time to get better and get more normalized to that. Mm-hmm. But once I do, I feel like if I can even get my ways out of those situations now when my stuff, you know, is going to keep getting better, mm-hmm. I feel like I have a chance, you know, obviously spend some time at that level.
Well, I was really impressed with the quality, especially of the – I thought – and you said, you know, get the fastball better. And I thought the fastball was certainly with that curve, the fastball really works. that combination really works, and the other pitches were coming along. The changeup, I saw a couple of changeups, but I didn't have much of an impression of them. But okay, now, do you have any specific goals for this year?
Did you have any?
I guess goal number one now is play a game.
Yeah, play a game. Good.
Yeah. No, I mean, nothing. More or less, you know, right now, especially this year, was to get some time on the big leagues, you know, obviously the regular season. And I still think that is hopefully, if we do get to play this season, is to just get some time in the big leagues and, you know, some time at that level to try to, you know, kind of prove myself, you know, get a little bit of time there, see if I can, you know, impress some people, get some good outings under my belt and, you know, see that level of baseball. Right. And obviously, you know, if I do get that level and have a few starts, there's definitely going to be times where I'm going to get rocked a little bit and stuff like that. You know, just make it a learning experience. And I think that's really what I want to learn more this year, you know, especially about the next level and, you know, in the Nigun team and the Ichigun team. I just want to learn more about them, you know, this year. And that was my biggest goal, is to, you know, get better. My pitching is to get a lot better and to, you know, learn more about the better levels of baseball here.
Now, what was the what things you talked about the quality of the baseball, but I mean specifically, what have you seen that has impressed you? They do this really, really well.
Obviously, the pitching side of it is, you know, the quality of, you know, obviously the limited walks, the quality of, you know, how good pitchers are and using their bodies and pitching and how they pitch and stuff like that. Mm. And, you know, and the hitting side of it is their ability to just not strike out, to get on base, you know, to play small ball, stuff like that, you know, just the smaller sides of baseball, not just hitting home runs, triples, doubles, to be able to, you know, guy in second, put a single, score run, win the game 2-1, stuff like that.
Okay. So have you watched many of the first team games on TV or?
Oh yeah. I've watched a lot of them.
Any guys really impressed you?
On my team or other
team? Any team.
Yeah. I don't think I've watched specific teams enough. Obviously on my team, there's plenty of guys, you know, Uchikawa, stuff, those guys, Yanagita, you know, guys who've, you know, proven themselves, who can really play. And more on other teams, I don't think I've watched any team specific enough to, you know, put like, you know, this guy is like, he's a stud. Like, he's going to be the guy that I want to, you know, face and get out. And there's no one specific yet that I think I've seen enough that I want to, like, I want to face them yet. But, you know, obviously, as I watch more and more, I think I'll find some of those guys.
Yeah, you'll need to know that answer, because the Japanese reporters, when you first come up, they're going to ask,
like, who do you want to get out?
Yeah, who do you want to get out? They probably asked you that when you got off the plane. They said, which Japanese hitter do you want to face?
Honestly, a little bit they did. They were like, oh, someone you want to face. And this was like the first month of me being there. I was like, I don't really know who like half these people are yet.
All right, buddy. We really appreciate the time today. One more question and we'll let you go. So you've started your career here. You're going along. We've got this situation with coronavirus and the season has stopped and everything. You came over here for a specific goal, assuming. What was that goal and how do you fight through this whole situation to grow this year to accomplish your goals as you move along in your career?
I think that to accomplish my goals, obviously my specific goal this year was more to get in the big leagues and get, you know, that time there. My goal while being here is, you know, is to like show that the people in the States, multiple things, people here and the people in the States, that they made the right decision to, you know, sign me at such a young age and help develop me. You know, proving people in the States that I was healthy, you know, even when I was 17, 18, when they thought I wasn't. And, you know, obviously, I think that, what was the second part of the question besides the goals? I just blanked out. I was only thinking about the goals part.
Yeah. Basically, short term and long term. So short term, how do you get better this year? Long term, you know, what is your goal in coming to Japan?
Oh, well, yeah. So short term, I think, you know, taking it individually, I actually went out to dinner with Dennis last night. And, you know, I've obviously been having a little bit of a tough time with these last, you know, really, what is it, three or four weeks now being individual practice. And, you know, I'm just trying to find a way to motivate myself and to get better. And, you know, I want to get better every day. It's finding a way to get myself better every day and, you know, move the right direction while, you know, doing everything individually. You know, I had a really good talk at dinner with him, you know, just about like, even if we're in this downtime, even if, you know, there's not really anything you can do right now, just motivate yourself to be better, just to be better than the next guy, you know, because the guys around you are always trying to get better. So why during this downtime can't you get better? Why are you just trying to maintain, you know, stuff like that? And I think that this year is going to be a lot about trying to, you know, get better, you know, without having any specific goal in mind, you know, without having, you know, maybe that ability to pitch this year. You know, we don't know if the season's going to be played. It's very possible that it doesn't. So even if that doesn't happen, you still have to get better every day. You still have to, you know, get ready for maybe it could be, you know, a little bit less than a year from now where we throw an actual game again. It's a possibility. So it was just talking to him a lot about like, what can I do to get better right now, to this year, this next week, this next day. And, you know, and that's a big thing for me is what can I do to motivate myself to get better? And, you know, and I think I, you know, found it a little bit trying to just get in there, get in the weight room, getting, get in the pen, maybe get on the just throw a long toss, just everything, single thing I'm doing, just motivate myself and realize that the guy next to me, maybe because I'm a foreigner, I have a little bit of a special privilege, that guy wants to beat you out no matter what.
Ooh,
you know. So I think that's going to be my goal really for the rest of this year, is to just, you know, do anything and everything I can to get better and to prove that, like, that they made a good decision for me to come over here, and that, you know, I can be better than these guys, just not just because I'm a foreigner and I got special privilege, but because I worked my ass off to get better than them, you know?
Good.
And I think the long-term goal is kind of a similar thing, is to be like, look, obviously I'm talking about Dennis a lot, but another great thing he said to me was like, you know, he's not known over here because, you know, he pitched well, obviously he is, but he's also known amongst the, you know, the players and the guys that, like, you know, he was a really hard worker and he was, you know, great on and off the field. You know, that's really, that's something I admire, because, you know, like, imagine, you know, you want to be known not just for your baseball accomplishments and what you did on the field, which is obviously great. You want to be known for what you did every day, for how much hard work you put in, you know, all that stuff. So, I mean, I think that's something that I really want to, you know, be known for at some point, is how hard I worked while I was here, and, you know, what I did for the guys around me, what I did for my, or, you know, for my family, my teammates, you know, my coaches, everything, you know, the positions I put them in. And I think that's my goal kind of going while I'm here, you know, for however long it is to show that, like, you know, I worked hard and I did everything I could while I was here. And, you know, maybe you don't know what's going to happen in your career, but I put everything on the table and, you know, left it out there. And hopefully, you know, it's in 20 years, people are talking about me after I had a good career, but you never know. And hopefully, and that's kind of my long-term goal while I'm here, is to just prove that I was, like, you know, I was a good sign, you know, I was worth it to be brought over here, and I worked hard to, you know, get better and be the best that I could be while I was here.
Well, that's a great answer. And I have a question too before I finish, but I should say that, yeah, first of all, Dennis is a great person to talk to, because he's, you know, the last 2 years he's been training in a vacuum.
Yeah, really.
So he knows more about that than most people. But yeah, now the other thing is, now how big is it? I mean, looking back, knowing Matt Skrmetta,
yeah,
obviously that's when you think about that, so many people maybe would like to have been in your position but weren't, because they didn't know that person.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's looking at it, Skrmetta is interesting, and you know, I've talked to him a lot about his career over here, and he's like, hey, he's kind of a good role model I have now, because he wishes he did more, and you know, with his career and stuff like that. So he's definitely someone that's good to talk about on, well, like, how, what could I do to get better, and, like, what not to do and stuff like that.
What not to do. Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
he's great, because he's very open about, you know, what is right and what is wrong and what he did wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Really, really upfront about that. So that's great. Well, thank you very much. I mean, I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, very wise perspective for such a young guy, a guy who's half Dennis's age. No, I'm not teasing you, Dennis.
Yes, we are. I got to pick on those 50-year-olds.
40-year-olds. I didn't. It's not my fault.
It's not your fault. All right, buddy. We certainly appreciate it. We'll be watching. Hopefully, we'll have some season to look and see how you develop, and see if you can get up to the first team. And we certainly enjoyed talking to you today. Thank you very much. We will talk again.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
All right. Well, how was that, guys? That was really cool. I just really enjoyed the whole time that we were talking to him, and that was really fun.
It was fun. And I want to thank him again for, you know, for taking the time. And I joke about getting up early, but if you're, you know, if it's not, you're suiting your schedule, 10 a.m. is early.
It is. And he said it was, but there's so many things. I mean, there's too much to get into. Probably that was probably the longest JBW interview in our history on the show. I mean, we've had longer interviews that we've shaved down, you know, the Bobby Valentine interview 4 years ago or so. I think I split in two, and we've used excerpts of other interviews, but this was definitely the full Monty, practically uncut. So what did you want to get into, since you were sitting there asking questions as well as I was?
I wasn't asking as well as you were, but I was asking questions. Now, significant thing for me was the phrase, if it was only about baseball, I couldn't succeed.
Yeah. And
because for me, you know, success demands finding a balance between being true to yourself and finding an equilibrium within a system. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that goes for anything. Now, this latter part doesn't mean you have to learn to speak Japanese. It doesn't mean you have to bow lower than your boss. Or, you know,
unless you work at the Toyota company.
Wow, you're really good at using chopsticks or things like that. Mm-hmm. But it does mean you have to learn to get along. And it means you have to accept the system is bigger than you and will go on just fine without you. And I guess I'm going to add this, and that there are things there to learn that you might learn from.
Definitely. I mean, that was something I picked up on. You know, I listened to the interview a couple of times, and when he talked about that cultural aspect, I started playing basketball when I lived in Nagoya in 1991 on a club team, and that was partially because I liked basketball, but it was for the cultural environment. Because the guys on the team, they taught me the language, and I didn't really have to study that much. They would just tell me, okay, when we say this, it means do this, that, and the other. And they taught me the language, but I got to learn, you know, how to play basketball in Japan, how they like to pass the ball, how they work better as a team. And it was not just about basketball, although it was doing something I really enjoyed, and I really loved playing basketball. And that's why I always tell people, when you're studying Japanese, do something you like. If you like photography, join a photography club. They'll teach you the Japanese, and you're doing what you like to do anyway. And you know mostly about it, so you don't need them to tell you some things. Anyway, it's for the environment. And that helps you, you know, just pursue whatever interests you have, and that will help you with the culture. And so he's in an environment, he's getting paid, and he's here for the culture as well. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, because I remember back what Gail Hopkins said, you know, the best advice Gail Hopkins said he got when he came to Japan in 1975 was from the Dragons manager at the time, Wally Onamine, who's a Hall of Famer. And he mm-hmm. said, look, you're not here to love Japan. You're not here to sample the culture. You're here to play baseball. And that's true. That's true. But and so it's not, I think it's not as I'm going to be a culture, you know, a culture vulture and, you know, and, you know, and start wearing, you know, like Japanese, like old fashioned Japanese clothes and do your hair like a Japanese and so on and everything. But what it does mean is you need to adapt to a system that's very different. And in some degree, you have to adapt to the system, because the system sure as hell ain't going to adapt to you. and I guess they, you know, you say, well, that's an obstacle if you go to Japan. That's an obstacle if you grow up. I mean, I just wonder how well it would play if you show up at rookie ball and say, I'm better than you all are. I have nothing to learn. You teach me what I want you to teach me, and just leave the rest out.
Yeah, you know, that's gonna work.
I can just see that going real well. I think there's stories about how Cal Ripken Jr. treated people he thought weren't with the program, and I think they still have the scars.
So yeah, I thought that was a really important aspect, and it was really something I didn't expect. Because when you talk to a guy, you know, he said he's 20 and he's going to turn 21 later in the year. You don't expect to hear this kind of maturity, but I was very impressed with that comment. Go ahead.
I wasn't that surprised, because I know he's absorbing things from Dennis Sarfate, who's like, and I said during the interview that a lot of the veteran players say that. You know, you have to embrace what Japan holds, not necessarily the culture, not necessarily you're going to go back to the States and start driving on the left side of the road or anything. But what I mean is you've got to accept that it's here, that it has things to offer, and that it's bigger than you are.
Yeah, and we know, and you said in the interview, you know, Matt Skrmetta inoculating him and giving him so much information about Japan, and that can help with the expectations and, you know, the responsibilities. But everybody has said you just still have to go through it yourself. And, you know, for him to have been here since June of last year and to come this far and to, you know, have that maturity, I was impressed with that. I think, you know, I thought it was just really cool that he's willing, and neither one of us has met him face to face. This was our first contact, and he's telling us how utterly challenging it is to train at home and to get motivated during this lockdown. And I'm like, I'm the same way, you know, I can go to a gym and I can work really, really hard. But if I'm at home, you know, I'm planning to do like 100 push-ups and I'm planning to do the 200 sit-ups and somehow I only get 10 or 15 done and I'm out and I'm eating. I'm digging around in the fridge. I don't know why. And I'm just more comfortable at the gym. And if I couldn't go to the gym, it would be obviously you're getting paid. That's your job. So you might find some time or make some time to do it, but it's really, really challenging.
What's in it?
And he admitted that to us. I thought that was pretty mature as well.
At least for me, it's been an evolution working from home. You know, at first it's this and then it's that. And, you know, it's sort of, you know, you go in these iterations. Okay, that didn't work well. This is working better. I'll try that. I feel this way about work. I feel that way about work. I feel this way about my free time. I feel this way about things other things I want to do and fit into my schedule. But what I find is that the longer I'm working from home, the more my schedule begins to look like what it did before I started working from home.
Well, I can tell you one difference is now, like, if I send you a message, you get back to me within an hour, whereas before it would be like 24. So I like that aspect.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, little things like not commuting and not have, and I can, you know, make my meals while I'm monitoring my workflow, you know, instead of spending an hour every day making my meals to eat at work and then spending 2.5 hours a day going to and from the office. Yeah. And those things help.
Yeah. Well, enough about you. Let's talk about Carter.
Hashtag high heat.
Oh, was somebody else on this show? Hold on a second. Oh, wait. Okay. Yeah. What were some of the things that you would like to emphasize or highlight?
Well, that was one of the things was, his maturity and his understanding. That's the other thing is a lot of times you don't understand your strengths. A lot of people might tell you some of your strengths and you might realize some of them, but your weaknesses that you have to attack, that is something that is, again, I hate to keep repeating the same word, but it's challenging to face up to that and to attack it and to go after it. And for him to talk about, I mean, you know, you asked him the question about, you didn't say mechanics, but what physically are you changing about your pitching? And he said, you know, trying to use his legs more in certain situations and things like that. So obviously the adjustment is the adjustment. And again, when I was talking to the former Indians and Yankee scout, Dave DeFreitas, he said, well, you know, he's in professional baseball now. Whatever adjustments he would have been making to professional baseball, he's going to be making the same adjustments, whether it's Japan or Major League Baseball organization. I think you had a quote in your story from someone who said something similar. But the whole being a pro part is different. And I understand it doesn't really matter where you are, but I, again, my question about, you know, getting your chops here in Japan, I mean, you know, they might want to tweak some things about your pitching or about approach and things that might not, that as soon as you get off the plane to go back to the States, if that's the case, that pitching coaches and managers and Major League Baseball teams are going to tell you to do differently.
Hell, if you're going to go play for the Houston Astros, they're going to tell you to do things differently. So, okay, no jokes. but I mean, the point is organizations do things differently. But, you know, the point is the fact that organizations do things differently in America now is interesting because it's a parallel to how it used to be America kind of did, American baseball did kind of things this way, and Japanese baseball did kind of things that way. That bringing people back and forth helps both systems grow. And that having, you know, and then now with new sources of input into American baseball, which was, I think, very fossilized for a long time, it's growing. And of course, people are not always happy with the way it grows, but at least there are other voices in the discussion besides, this is MLB, this is how we do it. You know, it's, it's good to have the input, even if, you know, sometimes it comes at the cost of banging trash cans.
Right. And in my story, I used Tony Barnett, the former Swallows, Yakult Swallows reliever, as a reference. And he's an advisor now with the Swallows. But one of his comments that came back was one that I used in my story, was that this is a path that a lot of players might be able to use in their careers. And maybe SoftBank, because it has a lot of money, is in position to try and fail. But SoftBank should try to, you know, do it again, just repeat, rinse and repeat and try again, so that this is not the first time. And then other teams might take this on. I mean, I've said it on the show before. I talked to a Dragons executive long ago and asked them how come they don't bring young players over and try to develop them and then let them go back to wherever it is they came from. Now, some, you know, the Carp obviously have been doing that with some Latin players, but the exec told me, well, you know, these teams, this was back in the 90s, in the early 90s, and the guy said, well, these teams don't want to pay money to develop players, they want to pay money for production. And so if that can change, and obviously SoftBank is a company that has money to, it can spare, even in these trying times, you know, some other teams with money might be able to try again. And so that's why I said this is a Curt Flood move, and hopefully it can open the path to having other players say, you know, I have other options as well. And so that's why I thought it was so
right. Now of course, and the one with my point about Curt Flood is he didn't have the options, but he pointed out, he made that a public, you know, by saying, you just can't move me. I'm an adult. I'm a grown man. I'm not somebody's property. And MLB was saying, no, actually you are property. So there was that conflict that raised quite a lot of consciousness. And I was about 10 years old, I think 9 or 10 years old at the time. And a boy came, I was talking with another boy in Christmas time, Christmas shopping with my family, and we were at the cheap supermarket and the cheap department store in my hometown. And a boy says, "I'm Curt Flood's nephew." And I don't know how that conversation started, but I knew who Curt Flood was, and I was not, you know, I was 10 years older than I was playing baseball. I was not really a big baseball fan at the time. But this is somebody that everybody, he was a name everybody knew. He was in the news often. So, I think, yes, that's the thing. People may in the future know about this thing. And I know I saw Mike Axie on Yahoo News say about what Carter referenced in his comments about the way things are changing in MLB with the draft and reductions in bonuses. And Mike Axia says, I expect more people to start looking into what can we get in Japan that we're not getting in MLB. Okay, now I want to mention what Sugihiko Mikasa, the general manager of the Hawks, said. Okay, he said, Carter Stewart is becoming better and better. When he arrived in Japan last year, he was a child. This year, he's an adult. He's bigger physically. He's mentally tougher. His pitching is bigger. Both manager Kimiyasu Kudo and the coaches believe he should be able to contribute on the big league team this year. Living in a, you know, I asked about the experience with the veterans, and I think this was very interesting because I said, you know, he's getting a lot from Dennis Sarfati and talking to Matt Moore and Rick Vandenhoek, and he said, because he's in a foreign country, he's in closer contact to veteran players than he would be if he was in his home country. If he was going to rookie ball, okay, he'd get the coach and the manager and then a bunch of people who know nothing about professional baseball. But here mm-hmm. are teammates with guys who've seen it all. You know, and this is a huge thing. This is something you can get in Japan. At least now you can get in Japan. I don't know about the future, but right now this is a golden opportunity. And I think it's something needed because the Hawks don't have experience doing these. Nobody's done this before. So having people like Dennis Sarfati has saved more than two, you know, he's fifth on the all-time saves in Japan. And Rick
he's the all-time leader in saves in MPB among import pitchers.
Correct. And Rick Vandenhoek, who led the Korean baseball organization in ERA and strikeouts 1 year, and Matt Moore, who started 151 major league games. And that's just how valuable is being around those guys when you're young. And obviously for Carter Stewart, it's really valuable.
Yeah, that's a very rich reference pool to go swimming in. So, yeah. All right. Excellent. Let's make a four-seam transition. There's really not much to talk about in terms of the schedule or COVID-19 infections and all that. So we'll just skip all that, go straight to the notes. And I saw the Marines early on were trying to keep a connection with the fans, and they were doing some videos. And then I did a translation in our paper maybe a week to 10 days ago about the Yomiuri Giants doing a lot on their YouTube page or YouTube channel. And I thought, well, this is not the first team to do that. Why is my paper making such a big deal about it? But then I'm like, okay. Yeah. Well, like they were the first ones, but that's really not the case. So
happens a lot. Yeah.
And it's nice to have the distraction, and they've been playing some old games on TV, and I did see the Dragons 2007 Japan series clinching fifth game, the combined perfect game last week. I just saw the ninth inning. I watched Hiroki Iwase close it out, and that was fun. But, you know, we're not getting a lot of anything on TV, and so I think TV stations and the players are trying to keep that connection up. And so what we've been seeing, in fact, this past week, the Central League managers got together and made a socially distancing or social distancing message to the fans. And, you know, they had message. I think there's going to be more from those guys. They got them together. But just to keep up the interactions with fans, what did you see? I noticed that Yuki Nishi of Hanshin donated some masks. And Hisashi Iwakuma, now of the Giants, the Yomiuri Giants, was donating some money, a lot of money. Mm. So what have you seen?
Well, a lot of money for me, sure. A lot of things. The Japan Retired Baseball Players Association, I hope I got the order right, has been doing lots of stuff with the public service messages, and certainly Catch Matt Winter's doing his magic acts. Probably the organization's founder, William Brooks, has probably been subtitling in Japanese. So he does his little, he's done about four or five that I've seen, and they're just hilarious. And Matt's just an all-around good guy. But all the foreign players are really chipping in with little messages to encourage Japan. And when I talked to Matt, I said it was surprising that the Japanese aren't doing it. But if you look on the team pages, if you look on the team's Twitter feeds, which I had a few, but not all, I saw the Nippon Ham Fighters have been very active in players taking part in very clever messaging.
Yeah.
Stay up with the fans. So lots of things are going on. The Carp manager, Shinji Sasoka, pitchers Daichi Osera, Kazuki Yabuta, and Masato Morishita, we're visiting COVID-19 patients in the hospital. I mean, face to face, relatively speaking, applaud those guys. Masahiro Tanaka donated 37 million yen, which is about
That's right.
$33,000 to efforts in Japan and the United States. A lot of players, teams have been donating 50,000 masks. And the other one was, speaking of the carp, Hiroki Kuroda and Takahiro Arai, two retired carp stars, combined to donate 70,000 masks to Hiroshima hospitals. So people are chipping in, and it's good to see.
As we hear a siren go off in the background here, I'm not sure if you can hear it or not, but yeah, it's good to see. It's nice to see. And like I said, no real news on the schedule, but still holding out hope personally that in July, maybe something can get going. It might be fanless, but as long as they're throwing and playing, I'll be happy.
Yeah. Well, that's what matters. John's happy.
Let's go to fielding questions. All right, the first one comes from Ross via the Facebook page, and I think I've been mentioning the past couple of weeks probably that still messages have been trickling in from listeners asking us to continue to charge ahead. And so Ross says, love the podcast and thank you for keeping it going through the delay. Very much appreciated. So thank you for that note.
Thanks, Ross.
Ross says, I have a question. With all the CPBL teams, that's the Taiwanese Baseball League.
National Baseball League in Taiwan.
Okay. To be more precise, all those teams now set to stream games with English commentary for free. Could you see the NPB doing something similar for international audiences? Also, what NPB team would you most like to be commentators for? Cheers, Ross. Jim.
Wow. Of course. Yeah. First of all, no, Japan won't be ready. Japan is so alien to the idea of showing its TV abroad. And even, and I'll tell you, I've been talking with the PLT, Pacific League Television, because they have it set up. You can watch them in the States. But basically their focus has been on Taiwan, on raising viewership in Taiwan, which is ironic now. And they're not really set up to do anything more than take your money in the U.S. And I'm sorry, guys at PLTV, because you're nice to me, but you know, that's the truth. But so I'm just trying to help them a little bit, you know, and get them ready with like an English page, but really they're not ready to even go. And if you want a little history of how Asian baseball plays in the state on American TV, there's something on my blog posted about a week ago. It's not a really pretty history. It's amateur hour.
Okay. Yeah.
As for what team, I guess I'd have to stick with the Swallows because I know them, but I could, Lions or Swallows would be fun.
All right. So, to answer the first question, well, can I see NPB doing something similar for international audiences? And there's just too many moving parts for NPB to gather them all up. It's like tentacles that are off that have been severed and are just squirming over writhing over on their own and doing their own thing from an octopus. There's just too many things to try to control. And so I don't think that would happen unless the Yomiuri Giants were on board with the whole thing and it was their idea. Then there would be serious talks, but then I think you still would have splintering with big companies like Rakuten and SoftBank and, how they want to do their own thing and how they can't all agree on how to do it. So I don't think so. And let's be honest, the only reason that the U.S. is interested at the moment is because there's no sports in the U.S. As soon as that comes back online, they're going to kick all this Asian stuff to the curb like it's, Cinderella's little sister. So I don't think that's, I don't see it as something being feasible and sustainable over time, but I would, I did ask Rakuten about English commentary. That team did have English speaking commentators for a season or two, maybe, I think it was. And they were just testing it out with people who had day jobs, some of whom really didn't know much about baseball and couldn't really speak Japanese, so they didn't know what was happening even with the PA announcements in the ballpark that were going on. They couldn't understand that as well. So I think if they were serious about it and hired people who knew what they were doing, hint, hint, that they could set a model for other teams. And then we get more teams on board with it, perhaps, or PLTV on board with it.
Yeah,
or
PLTV is, PLTV could do it because Pacific League has a marketing arm.
Well, Rakuten TV could do it as well.
Because they could, but they can only sell basically their home games or people they have contracts with. And they don't, and I doubt any of their contracts would handle overseas marketing. Whereas Pacific League marketing, to be honest, is probably in the same boat, but at least they have a contract. They have an agreement to market all of the Pacific League's home games overseas. And I don't think anybody else has that. So they could do it, but again, they're not geared up for it. And this took, and of course, the problem here is the problem.
The problem?
Well, so the KBO is opening on May 5th, and CPBL has opened on April 12th, actually, because of the 11th rainouts. And so people in the U.S. are interested, but right now it's a race to see who's less prepared to open the season between MLB and NPB. You know, a race to hear which country's response to the COVID-19 pandemic is worse.
Hashtag high heat.
So that's where we are right now. So I don't think there's any guarantee that Japan will get there this year, that either MLB or Japan will actually get to that finish line. You know, they may be holding out till next spring.
Yeah. So
John, who would you broadcast if you had a chance? If all 12 teams came to you and said, John Gibson, we need your services, which ones would you pick?
Well, the first team that would be out, or first teams that would be out, are the ones that are not in domes. And that's only because everyone knows, longtime listeners know, I'm prissy. I can't stand the cold. So Sendai out, I could not do that. Although I'm sure the press box is warm. It's an outdoor stadium. I just rather, and I don't want to go to the stadium in my old age and not have a game. So I want to go to the domes. You know what I mean? You get ready, you go, you do all this prep, and then the game gets rained out. I'm not having it.
You do.
So I'm going. Yeah, I'm not you. It would have to be a dome team. So from that, of course, you know, my team, the Dragons, I would love to go down there and do those games, but I'm not sure I want to stay in Nagoya that long each year. So, I mean, it's a beautiful city. I'm just used now to living out this way since, what has it been? Let's see, I spent 12 years there, went home for 2 years, and now I've been here more than 12 years. So, yeah. Wow, 15 in Tokyo. So, yeah. So I would say the first team, the Dragons, and then after that, any team with a dome. They're all the same, except for Seibu Dome, because that place is too hot when it's hot, and it's too cold when it's cold. So I'm out on that place, too. And it just seems like that press room, and I know they have TV booths, but that press room is never warm enough for me in the winter when it's cold. So I'm too prissy. Don't ask me.
Okay, thank you for the Lonely Traveler report.
All right. So you were the Swallow. So that's
Swallow
cool.
That place, sure.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm completely team based. I have no.
Yeah, I like my team, but I want to be. You know, if they were outdoors, I would say, yeah, I like the Dragons, but I'm going to go to the warm place because it's warm. So you know me. Everybody, you guys know me. All the conditions have to be right.
I could see that if, you know, they pay the broadcasters like they pay cabin attendants on airlines. You only get paid when the doors are closed. You know, you don't get your flight pay while people are squirming about trying to decide what seat to sit in. So if for example, if the game's canceled, you don't get any pay. Okay, well, then that's a factor. But for me, no, I'm good.
All right. The next question is more of a comment, and it comes from our buddy Dave near Baltimore. And he says, I'm betting you're going to get a bunch of emails on this theme, but I think you guys may have missed a few players when you were discussing foreign players who came back to MPV after returning to MLB, like Jay Jackson, who was on the show last week. So assuming I have the parameters correct, played in MPB, then MLB, then came back to NPB, I came up with the following list beyond Sikorsky and Destrade. Now, he mentioned Julio Franco first, and I had Julio on the list, but I forgot his short stint in MPB in 1998, and then he came back and played in indie ball. So I mentioned him on the show last week, but I forgot that 98.
Okay. You forgot 98 as his second return, his first return.
Correct.
To Japan. Okay.
Right. And then we did mention Casey McGee, but as usual, Jim was talking when I was talking, so maybe it was hard to pick up, but we did mention Casey McGee, so we had that one. The guys we did not mention include Fernando Seguino.
Yeah. Missed the Big Seggy. 11 games with the Yankees. And if it's 12, Seggy, don't get angry with me.
Right. And these are guys, you know, I not counting guys who are only in Major League Baseball organizations, because that list would just overflow, I think. Well, maybe not, because they didn't always end up coming back to Japan. But only guys who went from Japan, started in another country, came to Japan, went back to play in Major League Baseball, then came back to Japan. So another guy on his list is Roberto Pettigini, whom I've didn't know played in Major League Base. I totally forgot that. Now I'm remembering, but I can't remember what team he was with.
The Red Sox.
05-06. Huh, the Red Sox, 05-06. And then came to Japan to play with SoftBank in 2010, he's got.
Yep. You probably don't remember because he wasn't talking about it a lot.
Well, I don't remember because I don't think his bat was talking about it a lot, but I don't know. I just do not remember. And then Buddy Carlisle.
Yes, Buddy Carlisle. I completely missed because he was remarkable because he was with the Tigers, the Hanshin Tigers, and then he played for the Los Angeles Dodgers, and he played for then he went to Korea and played for the LG Twins. And then he went back and he played for the Atlanta Braves. And then he came back to Japan and played for the Nippon Ham Fighters. So, and then he finished his career in 2015 with the New York Mets. And that was 13 years after he left the Hanshin Tigers.
Wow.
I know. And I'm like, wow, exactly. How did we miss Buddy Carlisle? The guy's like, I don't know, like Zelig or Forrest Gump.
Yeah, I'd never met Buddy. I never met Roberto. And I do know Seggy, of course. And
last week, there's probably others that there are probably more than we can imagine. But,
and yeah. I threw out that caveat, exactly. I threw out that caveat before we got into our list last week or after, maybe. I can't remember, but I said there are probably more. And I told Dave in an email, because he said, I'm sure you're going to get more emails about this. And I'm like, hey, Dave, when I threw out that caveat about there are probably more, I had an image of your face pop up in my head. And he's like, no, you didn't. You know, I'm sure there are other, because there are trolls on Twitter who probably you were thinking about before me. And I said, I haven't met the trolls. Remember, Dave came out and gave us a copy, gave you and me copies of Wayne Grasek's first media guide. Mm. And I have an image of what you look like, Dave, and how you speak. And we broke bread together. I'm like, no, I don't think about trolls on Twitter. I think about people I know. And so I said, your name, your head, your face definitely popped up in my head as I was saying this.
The trolls aren't doing a good enough job.
Not breaking through the firewall.
Yeah, you got to try harder with John.
So, but yeah, it was fun. And so anybody else who has any of these guys, let us know how many we can dig up, because I'm sure it's a really hard list to put together. You got to really do some legwork, so to speak, with your hands. Legwork with the fingers on the keyboard to get through this.
Yeah, do some coding, baseball reference, I think that'll do it.
All right. So, obviously, in this time with no baseball, we really, really need you guys to come through, like Dave and like Ross, and send us a topic to discuss, a question, a comment, anything you want via email, yakyujohn@gmail.com, on Twitter @JBWPodcast, or on the Facebook page. Send us MP3s via email. let us know what's going on, because we're going to need your help. But I hope you enjoyed this interview. We've got more coming up. We've got them lined up so we can do at least three more shows, I know, and we can keep going. But we do also need your help in coming up with topics to discuss as we work through this COVID-19 lockdown, no baseball, no sports situation. Thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your lockdown.
I suppose. See you safe at home, guys.